Good afternoon. Welcome to the weekly livestock market update. Happy Friday to you. I'm Brownfield anchor reporter Megan Grebner. With us as always to talk all things markets, University of Missouri, Scott Brown. Good afternoon, Scott.
Good afternoon, Megan.
As we're talking right now, we still don't have election results for at least the presidential race. And we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up. And we may even get surprised as we're talking this afternoon, but there's plenty of us to get into otherwise. But to get things started, let's recap what happened this week in the markets.
Yeah, if we start on the cattle side this week, cash cattle were $2.20 higher this week. Those feeder cattle markets were pretty strong this week, up anywhere from $8 to $12 generally. On the futures side, the December live cattle futures contract was really unchanged on the week, while that January feeder cattle futures contract closed up $1.40. On the beef side, the choice box beef price was up nearly $4 this week on strength across the board in the beef side. If we look on hogs, barrel and gilt prices were down $2.20 this week. The lean hog futures contract for December was down $1.80. The pork cutout value was also down about $3.30 this week, really driven with what was some lower belly prices on the week.
When we talked last week, we were concerned a little bit about how the lack of election results could impact the markets. There's been some strength since Tuesday, maybe not so much. I know the Dow closed a little bit lower today and the grain side of things were mixed. But are we surprised to see the strength coming out of the election on Tuesday and how things have kind of held on for the most part this week?
Yeah, so perhaps I have been a little surprised. I think markets interpreting what could be more gridlock in Washington, D.C. is a good thing, that we don't have one party in control of both Congress and the executive branch, at least where we sit right now. Again, we don't know a lot of the final answers here, but that we see, especially the Dow, that certainly took off and had a couple of really positive days this week. Again, I think saying at least we don't get a lot of government interference relative to what's been a pretty good run. So it's an interesting interpretation, and we'll see what happens as we continue to narrow in on final results in a number of these key areas.
And we'll talk a little bit more about those election results and how everything kind of plays out as we get a little bit later. Let's talk weekly slaughter totals. Not so much or better on the cattle side, but really hog slaughter is holding on to that magic. I'm going to call it the magic number. Pretend I'm like John King or the other magic guy behind me with my wall. So that 2.7 is what we talk about kind of being the magic number on the pork side of things. Really holding on fairly well again this week.
Yeah, I'm glad to know now that 2.7 is your magic number. I'll remember that from this point forward. If we start on the cattle side, 647,000 head of cattle for the week. You have me stuck on two now, by the way. 647,000 for the week ending November 7th. That is up 9,000 head from where we were a week ago, just a 10,000 head below year ago levels. So we're doing okay in cattle, but not really ramping up relative to where we were last year. On the hog side, again, you have 2.713 million head, according to USDA for the week ending November 7th. That's another 30,000 increase from where we were a week ago. Also 15,000 head above where we were a year ago. So we'll need to continue to stay. I keep saying north of 2.7 here for many weeks here as we finish out the year.
If I had a board behind me, I would just put I would write it in and then circle it and put like arrows to it so everybody knew.
For next week, we'll make sure we get that figured out.
I will see what I can do. All right, let's talk trade. Obviously, this is something that we keep an eye on a regular basis. Yes, it was an interesting month for September as we look at those numbers.
Yeah, so, you know, a couple things as we look at beef and pork trade. Beef exports basically down 6% from a year ago.
if you look at where we were in August at about 268 million pounds of beef being exported out of the United States, now September about 239 out of the report that we got. So down relative to September, or down relative to August, harder than where we were down relative to a year ago. So COVID-19, I still think being more of a drag in terms of beef export markets. On the import side, you look back at July and we'd have been in a situation where imports were nearly 100 million pounds above year ago levels. And as we look at August and now September data, so September, we imported 300 million pounds. In comparison, we imported 380 million pounds in July. So we're starting to work back down in terms of those beef imports.
I think the question that people probably ask is, why do we import any beef? Obviously, we like to see demand for our product as well. And we know we have plenty of it here. So what causes us and what forces us to import beef on that side?
Yeah, so what I think is really hard to come to grips with is what would potentially be lower fed cattle prices if we didn't have some beef imports to come in. And the reason I say that is when you think about just how heavy these carcasses have been as we've been slowed down in terms of beef processing, you know, we've got a lot more fat to deal with and we need lean beef to go with that fat. And so we've seen the incentive to bring that lean ground beef in to go with the trimmings that we're getting out of those pretty heavy steer and heifers. So I think that's a lot of what's been going on. And again, you notice it is starting to come back down. And so I think the incentive for imports to meet that trimming side has been reduced. It tells me another maybe indicator of we're getting a little better in balance relative to what's been steer and heifer slaughter.
What about the pork side of things? Another fairly strong month for pork exports?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, so we're up relative to where we were a year ago in terms of pork exports. September of a year ago, we were setting about 460 million pounds of exports. We didn't quite get 550 out the door this September, but strength relative to a year ago. I keep saying, you know, we've now seen about 4 months between 5 and 550 million pounds. So reasonably flat the last few months. That comes on the heels of what was a March 700 million pound export number. Also much China driven, of course. And as our exports to China of pork have slowed of late, I think that's a lot to do with what's been the constant 5 to 550 number we've seen the last few months.
How much are we continuing to watch those weekly export sales reports to see what's going out specifically to China as we think about that phase one trade deal?
Yeah, so very carefully, and I struggle sometimes. I like to wait for the monthly data. I feel more comfortable with that, but the weekly data sure gives us a little better sense of what's going on. You know, if you look at pork shipments on a weekly basis, that they're up relative to September, but only maybe 16% above where they were a year ago. So maybe starting to see that even in the weekly data in terms of shipments. Now, sales, I think we're still seeing some pretty strong sales numbers going on there. And so we're going to have to rectify sales versus shipments at some point. And that's one of the issues we always face in that weekly data.
Let's talk a little bit jobs, which a good jobs report again today.
Yeah, that's right. You know, so we got 638,000 jobs added in October. We saw the unemployment rate fall to 6.9%. So certainly a move for more jobs and economy that's recovering. We tend to continue to see pretty good data actually coming out of that, but we got a ways to go. You know, we're still digging out of the hole that we created with much of the slowdown, shutdown that we saw back in March and April of this year.
Could we get a hyperinflated jobs report, thinking about coming into the holiday season where we're adding those seasonal jobs as well? Or does the COVID shift even impact what our seasonal job addition looks like? Because not as many people are going into a Target or a mall or whatever. And man, gosh, dang it, I love that curbside pickup option.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we're changing things a lot. So to me, it's I don't think it will be a traditional holiday go in Black Friday sales, stand in line for multiple hours. Instead, we're going to find a lot more of these online curbside pickup kind of things. So to me, the changes that has longer term, I still can't quite wrap my arms around what that means in total. Mm-hmm. I will say, I think even from a meat standpoint, the thing we're learning is the ability of curbside pickup. Restaurants that would have never thought about offering delivery or curbside pickup now know that they need to be in that game. And I think as cold weather comes, many of them that may have offered outside seating to try to generate more revenue are going to really work hard on that curbside delivery kind of option.
I thought it was interesting. I think about that here, and I had a conversation with Dan Hallstrom, CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation, really at the start of when COVID happened here, but on the heels of what was going on in Asia. And he had talked about how the demand front in their restaurant performance was significantly better than was anticipated because all of these restaurants adapted and changed how they serve their customers. And we saw that in like the innovation and that here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing how well, in some ways, we have changed to deal with COVID-19, especially from that standpoint, that I think if we hadn't had COVID-19, we would have been a much slower trend to maybe talk about a lot more curbside pickup, for example. And I just think that changes the whole face of the restaurant industry, probably longer term as well, even once we can talk about getting beyond some of these COVID-19 issues.
Before we wrap up this afternoon, I think we need to talk, obviously, election, and we alluded to that a little bit earlier, but there's still not just the presidency that hasn't been finalized yet. You look at what's going on in the Senate side of things, and we won't know the outcome and the breakout of the Senate, it looks like, until January.
Yeah, that's true. Again, it's been amazing just how markets have reacted generally. We've seen, again, higher moves in the stock market this week. Nothing really that's made markets too nervous at this point. But there's going to be a lot of things that Congress is going to have to work on. And it's interesting that work is going to have to take place probably without knowing some of the election outcomes. And yet it's got to get done. I think the last thing we're going to talk about is a government shutdown. So December 11th is going to loom large for perhaps what would be a final budget deal in this lame duck session. And so we'll have to wait and see how that plays out.
Do we worry about, I know we won't have a farm bill in this Congress, but it's not that far down the road. How do we look at, we're going to see a new chairman in the House Ag Committee. We're going to see a new ranking member in the House Ag Committee. We're going to see a new chair of the Senate, or at least a new chair or ranking member, depending on how that kind of falls out. How does that impact what goes on the ag side of things and how ag is maybe perceived and received from Congress when you lose a member like Colin Peterson, who seemingly had the ear of Nancy, the Speaker of the House?
Yeah, well, so I think the short answer is it could look significantly different, right? Not earth-shattering comment on that front, but exactly how it plays out. Again, I think you mentioned Chairman Peterson certainly understood agriculture as he had a long history in working on farm legislation. I think as you look at new leadership, you know, some of that history won't transfer. So we might see some different ideas. And I remind you, the current farm bill set to expire in 2023. We could conceivably, I suppose, start talking about that next farm bill already in 2021. And so we'll have to wait and see. There's certainly interest lining up, you know, on the House side of members that want to be in that chair spot. So, but I think it will be different, and the mix of ag programs and food stamps and other programs could look different coming out of the next side. So a little early, but certainly I don't think we're going to find that it's the same group. You know, we went through the last couple of farm bills, and it was a pretty normal group that of members of Congress that were really working on farm legislation. So we could see some maybe bigger changes again out of the next farm bill.
Well, there's plenty for us to talk about over the next couple of years.
I think it will keep us busy. That's right.
Scott, as we wrap up today, looking ahead to next week, a big report for us.
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to get USDA's WASDE report out on Tuesday. Towards the end of the week, we're also going to see retail meat prices, as well as then finish the week with another consumer sentiment report.
All right. Have a great weekend. We will talk to you next Friday.
You do the same, Megan.
We'll have our weekly livestock market update delivered to your email box every Saturday morning. Visit our website, brownfieldagnews.com. You can click subscribe. You can also submit questions and comments. And for all of the great Brownfield podcasts, check out brownfieldagnews.com/podcast. Have a great weekend. I'm Megan Grebner for Brownfield.